Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. We're here at the National Animal Interest Alliance Conference in Washington, D.C., and I am being joined this evening by Doug Lundgren, in addition to being a friend of mine for many years, is the AKC Vice President of pretty much everything, I think.
What is it? Sports and events.
Sports and events. Yeah, that's pretty much everything, Doug.
All the sports.
Excellent. Doug is a breeder of German Wirehaired Pointers, also, has been for many years. And brings that knowledge to his sports and events at AKC. So welcome, Doug.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Appreciate you joining us. And Doug, amongst other things, is the guy behind all of our new performance events that we have coming through in AKC. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and give us an idea of the traditional versus non-traditional. We were talking about that today in your presentation, that the traditional sports that we've had, the tests and field trials and those things, were for dogs who were testing a particular function.
Yep. And conformation.
Yep.
The form following function. So AKC's traditional dog sports, of which our majority of our dog sports still, are based on preserving and enhancing the traits necessary for a dog to perform the functions for which it was developed.
Right.
So it's a very utilitarian driven type activity based on historical function.
Right. It used to hunt. We're going to test how well it hunts now.
It used to hunt. It used to herd.
Right.
Those kind of things. Yep.
And that is still a valuable part of competition at AKC.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. It still makes up well over 50% of our activity.
What did you tell me? 3 million entries a year in performance events.
No,
is that right?
3 million entries in total. Over 3 million entries in total for AKC.
Okay.
Yeah.
But was all inclusive.
That's all inclusive.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you said that, I thought that was for just for performance, and my mind sort of blew up.
No.
Okay. Okay. So half of the performance events are field trials and hunt tests and herding and earth dog and like that.
Right.
And so you were giving the conference attendees a really great understanding of why you're adding some of these new sports. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, it gets a little bit philosophical, but I think it's real world in that the human-dog relationship is changing.
Right,
has changed. It has evolved over time, and it will continue to evolve. There's no reason to think we've arrived at the ultimate place.
This is the penultimate right here in 2017.
It will continue to evolve. The demographics of dog ownership will evolve. And there's no reason to think that dog sports all have to be based on some historical function, as those historical functions may kind of disappear into our rearview mirror, as part of society, yeah. For example, if you looked at the total number of hunting licenses sold in the United States, they peaked in the mid-80s. Well, so we have a lot of traditional dog sports that are based on bird hunting, particularly, and there's just less people doing that sport now. So we will still maintain those sports because the people who do it love it.
Very passionate.
And they're passionate about it. But realistically, as far as growing the sport or growing something similar to that, it's not going to be much of a growth area. And that in itself isn't that bad, except that if that's not growing, then there's more dog owners than ever. So what are these new dog owners interested in doing if they're not hunting, if they're not herding?
Right.
If they don't necessarily want to go to dog shows.
They like tricks.
What do they want to do?
Right.
And so there's where the changes in society come in. It's my belief that some of the changes in society that's affecting our dog owner relationship is people view their dogs more now as humans, their family members, the humanization of the dog, and how we spend our time is changing also in relation to the internet. That's just had a huge impact where we find people less inclined to join youth leagues or sport leagues of any type. Mm-hmm. That's what our sports are, basically, mm-hmm. is like a sport league. That's not only impacting dog sports, but everything. Little league, kids football, all that right. stuff. There's less participation. More time is spent trolling away on the internet, which we can say that's not good, but the fact is it's what's happening. And right. so we have to recognize that and adopt and develop sports that fit the newer dog owners of today. If we're going to attract them to organized dog sports, you got to attract them somehow. You get them doing now something they like, and who knows where they're going to transition to right. in the future.
Right. And we were just saying earlier, it's to use the phrase, a gateway drug, right? Many people started in obedience that now do confirmation.
That's right.
And there's no way to say that someone who starts with a trick dog title won't decide that doing confirmation or doing something else would be fun as well.
Right, right. In fact, one of the things AKC is trying to do the research on is, are there certain paths that are more logical, right. certain transition paths?
You know? Interesting.
If you start, one thing we do know, if you start in CGC, you're likely to go on to tricks.
Okay.
So now you're into tricks. What's next? Rally? Seems like a logical leap. Maybe obedience?
Right.
Maybe agility. Well, that's the kind of thing we're doing some right. research on, figuring out what are the logical paths that maybe we can promote people to transition to new sports.
I like that. That's nice. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things, and it was alluded to in a question in the presentation tonight, that kind of ties into what you're saying. How do we encourage people down the path to become breeders? Because breeders keep us all in the game.
Right. Well, breeders.
And I have people asking me that all the time.
Yeah. They came up and asked me about it afterwards. Right. How do we recognize breeders more?
Right.
The fancy breeders, mm-hmm. like we're talking about, not the commercial.
Hobby breeders.
Yeah. The hobby breeders. That's something that you start to consider doing when you get kind of serious in this thing. You know?
Right.
So some of these new sports are meant just to get them involved.
Yes.
And they'll develop their relationship with the dog, maybe transition into some more serious sports, engage over a period of time. And then, like many people of our age, you know, they go, hey, my dog's pretty cool. My dog's pretty special.
Yeah.
He comes from a nice line.
Right.
And, gee, maybe I don't want to break that. I want to continue that on. So I think the breeding is a logical conclusion of attracting and transitioning, and somewhere along that transition comes the breeding.
Beautiful. That's what I was looking to say, because I really do think we got to grow the sport, and I think what you're doing, and tell us some of the ones, because there were some I knew about trick dogs, but you said you just had your first scent work trial.
Yes, our newest trial, actually, as of 2 days ago,
right?
Can't be any newer than that, is one that's called AKC Scent Work.
Right.
AKC is getting into the nose work, scent work sport, and all indications are it's very popular. It's the full meal deal as far as the sport goes. And by that, I mean, the clubs have to get licensed. We have licensed judges now, so we have to come up with a judge's education, which we've done. Clubs have to apply. We have to do the results. So a lot of programming and pre-planning that's been going on now for a good 9 months since we said, okay, we're going to do this.
Oh, wow.
And it takes a lot of
But that's actually 9 months. I'm impressed. I would have said it would take a couple of years. That's good.
Well, yeah. At the beginning, it's a little bit intimidating. You sit down, basically say, now I'm going to write a rule book from scratch. Whoa.
That's what I said. Yeah. I'm like, whoa.
But luckily in sports and events, we have some great employees, enthusiastic. Some young people that really took it on and did a great job.
Very cool.
In getting it going with some.
So tell me about scent work. How is it? Where do you start to draw your? Is it like tracking? Are you going to do it from that direction or not?
Well, I think tracking people would be a natural audience. The tracking world is relatively small.
Right.
But I think most people, they obviously know their dog can smell better.
Right.
Pretty darn good. And so scent work is really something that I think intuitively is open, would be of interest to almost any dog owner.
Right.
At our first couple of events, we had everywhere from some little toy breeds to a deer hound.
Nice.
I remember was there.
Nice.
So we had the whole gamut of sizes, and it's structured in levels. So the beginning level is relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to have a degree of, you got to expose your dog to the situation so it knows what it's looking for. But it's not a real training intensive front end sport.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
And then there's increasing levels of difficulty. Mm-hmm. And as you work your way up the totem pole, so to speak, mm-hmm. you will have to train your dog more. Mm-hmm. But you can get started, maybe not right off the street, but pretty quickly. And I think people are fascinated to see the dog's sense of smell really telling the story to them.
Yeah.
Another little thing that is interesting to watch brand new people, you have to learn to read your dog. Because dogs indicate right. scent in different right. ways. Some dogs sit down. That's pretty mm-hmm. obvious. Some dogs stare. Mm-hmm. That takes a little bit longer to figure that out. Some dogs paw. Right. Some dogs start to whine.
Right.
You just have to know when your dog is saying, here it is. I got it.
Right, right.
And you can see people actually pull their dog away from the scent because they didn't believe
right.
them.
Right.
Well, they'll learn.
They'll learn. Know. We come from bird dogs. We know about these things.
Yeah. So, I think it's going to be a very popular sport. It's open
nice.
To all. One of the things nice from a club's point of view, because it's multi-leveled and you can do it in different settings.
Right.
Like in the beginning levels, some of them you can do in a ring.
Oh, perfect.
And a club can just pick whatever classes they want. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't have to offer every level.
So one of the, they call them elements in this sport, it's really one of the settings, is an outdoor setting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you're having a dog show right. in some northern climate in the wintertime, you may not want to do that.
Right.
But you can do the class that you just set up in a ring
in your
dog show.
And so for all breed clubs, does the Scent Work Club have to work with the all breed club to set it up? Is that the idea?
Well, an all breed club can become licensed for Scent Work
okay.
if they have any
okay.
degree of knowledge within the
okay.
club.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just somebody in the club has to
right.
have enough of a clue that they can run it.
Right. And
okay.
of course, you got to have a judge that's
right.
licensed. That means he's gone through our classes.
Right.
So the judge will help guide you. We see a lot at the front end here.
Right. Well, yeah. and Barn Hunt is one that I've seen just take off like crazy.
Well, Barn Hunt's kind of the same thing. You can do it inside. You can do it outside. Mm-hmm. You can do certain levels. Barn Hunt is kind of like
doesn't
a specialized,
take very much room.
Doesn't take a whole lot of room.
I was at a show. They had it under a...
Like a pop-up.
Like an easy.
Yeah,
basically a big one, but still.
Right, right, yeah. No, I think Scent Work will be good from a club's point of view because you can kind of pick and choose the class that happens to work in your setting.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
okay.
That's
right.
our...
And tricks. Tell me about tricks.
Well, tricks is
tricks
something...
Tricks are for kids. No.
Tricks are, no, it's not that kind of trick. The tricks program we started this spring.
Right.
And right now there's four levels. There's a list of tricks
right.
that are the novice tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the intermediate tricks. And you have to have so many tricks that your dog can do off the novice list. And then there's no clubs. That works through the CGC evaluator program.
Oh, interesting.
So you can go find a CGC evaluator, or more likely the CGC evaluator may be having a tricks class or a tricks testing course.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to find them. Do your tricks in front of the evaluator, and they will verify that you've done the right number of the right type. And then fill out the form that you've passed the tricks. And again, the beginning is trick. The idea of a trick is not a well-defined thing.
Right.
What exactly is a dog trick?
Right.
You know, at the most beginning level, like if you talk to people who teach dogs for movies in Hollywood, you know, they have basic building blocks that start with a lot of obedience. Stand still.
Mm-hmm.
Sit. Come
lie
here,
down.
Lie down.
Right.
You know, those are the building blocks that you got to start with in order to develop tricks. A lot of dogs know those already.
Right.
So you start with those, then you can get some very advanced tricks that you really are unique that the dog has to learn in and of itself. So.
And then there's one level you have to like make a movie. I saw somebody, social media is big on tricks, just FYI.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, at the upper level, it's called the performer level. And that one is not done through CGC evaluators. That one, you have to make a little video.
Yes.
And send it to Mary Birch, who's the director of the CGC program.
Okay.
And she looks to make sure it's met the criteria for the performer level.
Very fun.
We're going to add a fifth level. At the performer level, we had hoped, but we weren't clear enough in our direction, that people would actually have a theme and sort of develop a skit.
Right.
As opposed to doing 10 discrete tricks.
Right.
And some people have, but a lot of people just do 10 discrete tricks. What we want to, at the upper level, now the new level, mm-hmm. is say, you got to have a theme.
Right.
And you can have music.
Right.
But there's a storyline that goes with
Little
your
Little Red Riding Hood or what?
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
I know we have a lady at work whose dog loves to duck dive, and she fiddles around with her dog all the time, and she just started teaching the tricks. And so she has put those things together, and her routine is going to be, my dog's getting ready to go duck diving. And it shows him getting up in the morning and stretching and whatever his little routine
is. Get his outfit.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
So that's what we're going to do.
Right.
And that will have real entertainment value, I think, to people.
Right.
You know, that'll be very popular.
Well, and I love, it's similar to what they did with Westminster Kennel Club, with their obedience that David Haddock and those guys put together. Where the advanced levels, they have to do themes.
That's right.
Storybook kind of presentation.
Yeah, we worked very closely with Westminster and David on that.
Yeah.
And they, in the end, it came out wonderful.
It's fabulous.
But in the beginning, David just called up and said, hey, I got this idea. I think we want to do obedience. And I said, obedience? Really? You want to do obedience? Okay. And he said, well, maybe not exactly obedience. You know, it's some sort of variation. And he said, why don't we work together? And so AKC and Westminster worked together to see what you have now.
Right. Which I think is great.
Yeah, it's works totally out pretty good. I think tricks will take that basic idea and go even further with it. We've already had some of our kennel clubs who are always looking for ways to attract the public.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Call up and say, hey, can you help us put together a trick dog performance, routine, whatever, like in the middle of the day to attract audience.
Yeah.
And we're going down that path. I don't think yet have enough of the performer level or even this new upper level in any one area to say, hey, we can get you 12 performance dogs to come as an invitation just to be attraction to the general public.
Which I think, again, I have these seminars and I talk to people and I do all this stuff. And I think everything I hear is constantly about bring the public, get more information, purebred dogs to the public. And anything like that is fabulous.
Yeah, I think it has to be that. If we just kind of freeze up and hunker down, the world just keeps on going and the sports are left behind gradually. So Patty, you know, Strand, one of the reasons she's so big on a lot of these new sports, and I had not thought about this until she called me up a year and a half ago. She said, Doug, you are making my job at NAIA fighting the animal rights people much easier. I said, well, how in the heck are we doing that? She says, if you give people something that they want to do, it's hard for them to hate you. I'd never really thought about that before. But yeah, you know, you're attracting people that otherwise may bash some of our traditional sports. But now you've engaged them in a positive manner. They're having a good time. Clubs are benefiting from it. So I think it's working from that angle, which I hadn't even thought of when we started down this
path. Sure, but I think Patty's absolutely right. And the public perception piece, the bringing people to purebred dogs and the purebred dog fancy, all of it together, I think is just huge. So which one else do you think is going to be like take off and be wild?
Well,
because you just started dock diving, right?
Well, dock diving, we started that
a couple of years ago
in 2014.
Okay.
And that is still it's growing, very popular. We got hooked up with, there's several different dock diving groups. We got hooked up with one. It's been a great association for both. And they are getting engaged more and more with the clusters.
Yes.
And attracting people to some of the clusters. There's a certain front end effort for them to haul a dock, fill it up with water.
Sure.
And so there has to be enough activity. So they can't do it with every single dog show.
Yeah, a weekend dog show.
It doesn't justify the front end effort on the dock diving people's part. But certainly for the cluster, the bigger clusters, it's proving to be successful for the clusters by attracting new people. A lot of the show people come out.
They love it.
They do it themselves, you know, once their dog's done for the day, depending on the breed you have.
You can go jump in the water.
Yeah. And it brings in new people. We did do a survey of people who came to an event for dock diving.
Oh, yeah.
And we found that 87% of them, even though they came primarily for dock diving, 87% of them then wander into the show.
Nice.
Watch the show.
Nice.
Look at the vendors.
See the vendors, right?
So it's working to bring them together. So that's been a very popular one. Another one started the CAT, or the Coursing
Fast
Ability
Cat,
Test.
Right?
Well, and then the most recent one is called Fast CAT,
right,
which is just the pure 100-yard dash.
Right.
And one of the advantages of Fast CAT is you can do it in a, you got to have
small
100
space.
Yards plus start and plus quite a bit of finish. The dog has the ways to stop. But you don't need a huge lot of land. So some of the show sites are conducive to that. Or even if the show site isn't, we have quite a few confirmation clubs that are doing both the CAT, or Coursing Ability Test, and now Fast CAT.
Right.
Because it's fun for dogs. They attract new people to the club. And they can make money at them.
Yeah.
So
not a lot of heavy investment in equipment to do a CAT run.
No. And a Fast CAT, you know, right, it's a timed event. You need a starter and a timer. There's no judgment even applied to it. And then, as I mentioned,
I think this is funny. You got to tell that story.
Time to run the 100-yard dash is turned into miles per hour,
right?
Which people find fascinating in and of itself because they can relate to miles per hour,
right?
And then we have a top 20 ranking by breed on the AKC website. Well, when we started, we rounded to the nearest mile an hour. Thinking, that's good enough, isn't it? You know, well. By the end of the year, for almost every breed, you'll find there's a cluster of dogs at the top who all run the same mile per hour. And people were getting upset. They didn't want to be one of the top six whippets. They wanted to know where they stood exactly. So we had to back up and redo our calculations. It's more refined now than it was at the beginning to go to the nearest 100th of a mile an hour.
That's good.
So now nobody's tied, you know. Which makes them happy.
That's good. Keeping people happy is part of your job.
Yep. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
All right. So. Well, thank you, Doug. I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy with a lot going on. So.
Well, thank you much. Thanks for inviting me.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.